You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell, and this is The Life Aquatic. Now, many people dream of quitting the rat race and heading off on the adventure of a lifetime. Some even dream of making their entire lives an adventure, buying a camper van or a boat and driving or sailing off into the sunset. But very few people actually do anything about it, and fewer still manage to actually pull it off. Well, every week on The Life Aquatic here at Boat Radio, we speak to a couple or a family who've managed to do just that, turn their whole lives into an adventure. Today's couple is rather special because they're joining us just days before they are due to set sail on their very own odyssey. Many of you will have read their wonderful website and will be following their progress as they prepare to cast off. They are Mark and Jennifer, and their boat is the sailing vessel Luna Sea. Do you see what they did there? Welcome, both of you, to Boat Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, I am actually looking at the countdown on your website, and it's 31 days and just about 10 hours until you leave. So, Jennifer, what's the significance of October the 1st? I'm presuming it's October the 1st, if my maths are correct. What's the significance of that date?
I'm not sure there is one. It's just a good balance between being terrified to leave and being excited to leave, and we're hoping that's enough time to kind of wrap up the last few projects.
Right, so the significance is that that's the time you need to get everything else done.
We hope, and I feel like you need an actual date to strive for, or you just may never do it, and that's our date.
Right, right. That's a good idea, actually. That's true. You set yourself a goal. So, Mark, you and Jennifer, you've been together, I think, for about 20 years. So let's start at the beginning. How did you meet?
Our parents lived a few houses away from each other, and we met in our 20s in Oklahoma.
Okay.
Just kind of by chance.
Because your parents were neighbors.
Yeah.
And so Oklahoma is a fairly long way from the sea.
It is a fairly long way from the sea, indeed.
How many hours' drive is it from the nearest spot on the coast?
You can get to the Gulf in about 10 hours. If you wanted to drive to the East Coast, it's 20 plus. So it's pretty much right in the center of the country. So you're definitely landlocked.
10 hours. 10 hours drive. I mean, I live on an island, you know, and in 10 hours, in 10 hours, you could go round and round it like five times. Have you always been fairly adventurous people?
Yeah, I think so. We're definitely both outdoor enthusiasts. We like to go camping. We like to be in the outdoors. We've always, well, ever since we could afford it, had some form of boat, so just love being on the water. When we were younger, it was power boats, and for various reasons that we'll probably touch on today, we moved into sailing just a couple of years ago.
Hmm. And Jennifer, have you traveled abroad a great deal?
Yes. We've tried to travel multiple times a year for the past several years. That's one of the few things we really love to do. We're not concerned with things so much in our lives, which has been convenient since we have no space for things in our tiny boat. But travel has been at the top of the list. So we do make sure that that's in our budget regardless.
I mean, if you're traveling abroad or even within the United States several times a year, I'm going to take a wild guess here and say that you don't have children.
We have one, but she is 25.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so she's on her own.
Wow. Okay. Wow, so you've got grown-up children.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've seen, that surprised me. Yeah, okay. So what does she think of all of this then? What does she think of Luna Sea?
She's supportive, but a little bit concerned. and is about to start her own journey. She's looking at selling her home and buying an RV and doing something similar on land herself. So,
and where is she right now?
She's in Savannah.
She's nearby.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Okay, sure. Yeah, we'll get on to you being in Savannah, Georgia a little later. So Mark, you work in the aerospace industry. And Jennifer, are you a chef or you've just become a chef?
I completed culinary school while we were waiting on our daughter to graduate college. We had a long-term plan for this to sail away. And since we would be here anyway, I thought it would be best if I learned as many things as I could that I could travel and do to make money. In the instance that we end up needing repairs or something that really blows our budget, we want to be able to fix that as soon as possible. So I can cook food anywhere, and that was just an easy way for me to add something to my resume that could travel.
We're talking about a real long-term plan here, right? If you're planning to possibly work on the way, mm-hmm. we're looking at a few years, right?
Oh no, we're looking at until it's no longer fun.
Yeah, or potentially never coming back until we could tap into our pensions and 401ks. So,
okay,
the goal was when we go to position ourselves so there would be no end as long as we continue to love it.
For the benefit of our non-American listeners, a 401k is?
A retirement savings plan.
Okay. Speaking of retirement, a recent blog post on your website suggests that you, Mark, at the age of 47, have retired.
46.
46. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I had a long-term goal to retire before 48, and so I actually beat it by a year and some change, so very proud of that.
Yeah, that's great. So you are retired?
Yes.
I'll tell you what, I'll leave this question till later, because we'll get on to the long-term plan in a little bit, and I'll ask you this instead. Jennifer, did you sail as a kid?
No. We had never been on a moving sailboat until we did the survey of lunacy.
What?
That's correct.
Yes.
Well, sorry, I thought Mark said earlier on that you've always had some kind of boat.
We've always had power boats. And if you've ever been on a sailboat and a power boat, you realize they are absolutely different animals. They behave in no way the same.
Yeah. No, this, yeah, I understand. Yeah, I understand. So I have to. So you've always had motorboats. What, on lakes?
I would say mostly coastal inland, and then kayaks. We both were avid kayakers for years and had touring kayaks, whitewater kayaks. But for the most part, it's always been inland. Our time offshore is pretty limited to scuba diving is about the only time we would ever venture offshore.
I'll tell you what, let's get into lunacy a little bit later on. I have a few more questions that I'd like to ask you before then. So, Mark, you've had a long-term plan, as you say, to retire before you were 48. You beat that well in advance of your target. But what was the genesis of this adventure, this odyssey that you're about to go on? Did one of you just say to the other one, you know, one day, let's buy a boat and sail away together?
Well, it's a bit of a, always been kind of something that we built upon a dream to travel. So we both wanted to travel. We knew that was, you know, a long-term goal for us. I wouldn't say we stumbled upon this, but when you look at the different ways that you can travel cheaply, and obviously we're not by any means millionaires, so if you want to retire early and you want to travel, there's only a limited ways that you can do that. So we originally looked at doing it on RVs, which might be something we do down the road, And then we also looked at the possibility of doing it on motor yachts, and just fuel cost alone kind of starts to really cut into any kind of long-term budget that you would have. So long story short, that kind of is what got us into sailing, is it gives us the ability to achieve our goal to travel. And since you're taking your house with you, you can really cut cost and stretch out any cruising kitty or retirement fund that you've got. So that's kind of how we got here.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, when you worked in the aerospace industry, were you an engineer? I mean, are you pretty handy with fixing stuff? You know, if you need to get, you know, fix the fuel injectors on your engine, you'll be able to do that, right?
So I had the privilege to work for a really good company that had a tuition reimbursement program. So I grew up built aircraft my entire life, and then went to college while I was working for the company. So then I, you know, over the years, I moved into management and managed the interior shops. So between being able to build an aircraft and then learning the interior side of what, by then I wasn't hands-on anymore, but observing the technicians that I worked with every day, it gave me a pretty wide skill set to do just about everything that there is on a boat.
Sure. I mean, even though you've been management for, you just don't lose it, do you? You got it. You know, you're a handy guy. And Jennifer, when did you hatch this plan then? I mean, it was years ago, right?
Well, we officially started, narrowed it down to boating about 5 years ago. We looked at powerboats. We looked at trawlers. We eventually looked at catamarans. They were cost prohibitive. To do this early, it really needed to be a monohull. And you just acclimate to the size. We were a little bit concerned that we would never be comfortable in a monohull. We're very comfortable here.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, you've obviously, because it's about your attitude, isn't it, really? It's about how you look at it and whether you're positive about it, or whether you get on and you think and you want to moan about it. You know, the moaners are not going to get on living in a small space. What do your friends think of the plan then, and your family? When you first mentioned it to someone else outside of you two, I mean, did they think that you would pull it off, or was there skepticism, or did people just nod and kind of humor you?
They definitely humored us, particularly, you know, our family obviously had concerns and questioned how he could walk away from the career he had built. That was a major concern for most people. But as we've gotten closer within this past year, and clarified that this is happening, they've actually become very supportive. We get a lot of comments now that they've come to grips with it, that this is the time to do it. We're both in our early to mid 40s. We're still very active and very healthy. And this is the time to go and do this versus waiting 20 more years where we would have more money, but we might not have help. And the health aspect and the activity aspect is huge to us.
Sure. So 5 or so years ago, what was the first step?
So in 2009, I had a really good work opportunity to go to Switzerland and work for several months. That's when Jen dropped out of the rat race. She worked for a local aerospace manufacturer also, so she quit her job and traveled with me out there. So that was kind of the first time that we realized that we could do a minimalist lifestyle. So we lived for several months out of 2 suitcases each. When we got back to the States, the first thing we realized was all of the stuff in our lives was kind of dragging us down. So we had to clean the pool, we had to mow the grass, we had to clean the house, we had to take care of the cars. I guess we had never really realized how much that really takes a toll on you. Just little by little, all the stuff that you have can kind of wear you down. So in 2009 was kind of when we originally hatched some version of this plan. And that's when we started downsizing. So we, put the house on the market, sold it, bought a smaller condo, which was just kind of a tester to see if we could live in a smaller in a smaller space, which that I think the condo was only about 900 square feet. So that was a major change for us.
I think just to interrupt there, Mark, I think you're kind of underestimating just how sort of unusual and and well, yeah. You laugh, and I've probably phrased it in the wrong way, but just how unusual and sort of interesting in that sense you guys are, because it's the wrong way round. You know, usually people don't downsize until they're not able to get up the stairs anymore, you know?
It's been particularly difficult. That has been one of the biggest changes for us, is to overcome the, and I realize it's other places as well, but the United States is particularly bad, for lack of a better word, about basically training you to buy more and buy bigger and have more, and constantly upgrade and constantly upsize. And while we did that to some degree, leaving and hanging out in various parts of Europe, we realized it's not necessary. You don't need stuff. You don't need bigger and better. You really, really need very little. And so we've just adjusted our lives to fit that.
Mm.
And we're approached by a lot of people that want to do it. And it's kind of fun having those conversations to start coaching friends and colleagues on here's the steps we went through, here's the things you could try to do. And then you kind of see the look on their eye when they would have to give up this possession or that possession. And at that point you realize that they're probably never going to be able to make the transition, even though they say they want to. But every now and again, we have a conversation with some friends that we think someday might go down a similar path. So it's fun to coach people through it, that's for sure.
Sure. I mean, it's almost a TED talk, isn't it?
It could very well make a great TED talk, yeah.
So, alongside this...
I guess as long as we're on this topic, there's one point I'd like to...
Please go ahead, yeah.
So we were... This probably only happened maybe 4 to 6 months ago, where we had been living on the boat for about a year. We had sold the condo. We had sold most of our possessions. And we were walking through, and I don't remember whether it was Walmart or Target, but we had to go into a superstore basically to get one thing. And your normal routine when you would go into these big box stores is you go in to get one thing and you look around and you leave with 20. Well, at the same time, Jen and I both kind of realized we went into the store, bought the one thing, checked out, and we're walking out. And we had not looked at a single item in the store other than what we had gone in to buy. And that was just a paradigm shift of how we had been programmed our entire lives. And we kind of both had that realization. I just remember the trip where at the same time we're like, you know, we went in, we bought the one thing we went in for, and we didn't look at anything else. That was kind of an aha moment for us that we could definitely go down this path and really have no second thoughts about looking back.
I have the feeling that the ultimate capitalist society that functions on consumption and credit will be glad to see the back of you two.
Yes.
Before you spread any more of your poisonous ideas. Presumably, alongside this, what you describe as a paradigm shift in the way you sort of conduct yourselves in your lives generally, presumably you had a financial plan. I mean, was it simply to save and save and save, or did you already have it licked because of your pension, your retirement plan?
We actually cannot touch our retirement money for at least 12 to 15 more years, I think. And if we do it, then we'll be taking a hit on it, I believe.
A tax hit,
which we would like to avoid. But we started buying rental properties a few years ago. And about 7 years ago when we came back from Europe as well. And we've had over time three separate rental properties. I've managed those. I do a lot of the repairs on those. When it's too big of a job for me, Mark comes in and we'll tag team it and that's been very handy with boat repairs as well, because it does translate to some degree. And then we've recently sold off one of those rental properties, and we'll keep two of them so that we will have, it's pretty meager, the budget we'll have, but we do have ongoing income while we travel.
Okay. You two are clever. No, really. I didn't mean that to sound so patronizing. I do apologize. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to ask, I'm going to brush over that awful comment and ask a better question. Jennifer, would you describe yourself as, you certainly sound it, but would you describe yourself as a tenacious individual?
That's probably a good description.
I'm not going to touch that one.
No. But let's just think about the word tenacity. Mark, was it key to pulling off this escape plan, tenacity? Or did you find, actually, that the pieces all, you know, kind of fell into place fairly easily?
I think the key is to make sure that you and your partner agree on the destination, or at least agree in general on the plan. And I think that's what's helped us be so successful, is that we both want to be on this journey, so there's not a ebb and flow of effort. All of our effort is in the same direction. We even kind of, when we started downsizing years ago, we kind of made a pact that we wouldn't buy anything if it didn't support the mission. So if it wasn't an upgrade on the boat, or if it didn't help us achieve what we wanted in life, then we just didn't need it. And so I think kind of coming up with a plan together, and it both being something that we truly wanted to do, definitely helped us stay on the right path.
I think you've actually just defined tenacity with that statement. So Jennifer, you mentioned you'd had motorboats before. Lunacy is your first sailboat. Tell us all about her. She's a Beneteau, right?
She is. She is a 39-foot Beneteau. Technically, she's an Oceanus 393. We have measured all of this roominess, and we have about 300 square feet. I realize that will be different in other parts of the world, but I can't convert that for you. It's a three-bedroom, two-bath with a full kitchen. It's a two-burner stove, oven, sink, and refrigerator / sometimes freezer. that's down below. You know, upstairs we've done some upgrades. We have solar panels. We have everything led to the cockpit. So really, the two of us can handle this boat. And with more practice, we expect to both be able to single hand, you know, as we're doing longer trips.
Well, I can tell you that 300 square feet is, and I didn't do this in my head, is 27 square meters. Now, my first apartment in London many years ago, because I'm old, was 58 square meters. So 27 square meters is quite small. However, I didn't have, you know, millions of square miles of ocean immediately out the window. So it's a very different thing altogether. Can I ask, and I know this is a delicate question, and do please refuse to answer if you wish, how much did you pay for her?
We actually got a particularly good deal. I'm not sure why yet, but we paid about 80,000 US.
Okay, and she's what, like 14 years old, something like
she's
that.
She's an 02, yeah, 2002.
Right, and she's in really good shape.
Yeah,
she really is.
Her history was, she was a charter boat, we believe, for about 5 years, and then was owned by a British couple that cruised her and kept her in Florida when they were back in the UK. So it was, they took meticulous records and hand-drawn schematics of any upgrades or modifications that they did, and we were able to purchase the vessel turnkey. So linens, pots, pans, silverware, all of the fenders and safety equipment, EPIRB, it basically was ready to go turnkey.
Yeah, well, that sounds really good. I mean, how did you find the whole boat buying process? I mean, buying a sailboat's a very different thing, a very different prospect from buying a boat with just an engine in it. Did you find it easy? Did you walk it? How did you go about it?
We went on probably 50 different sailboats once we narrowed it down to monohulls. And then one holiday weekend, Mark and I headed down to look at basically this same boat, just a different model, a different layout, same boat, different layout. And we looked at it and it was complete bare bones. It had been absolutely gutted of any, no pots and pans, no fenders, no lines. There was nothing on this boat, but it was a pretty good price. And we had a check written out and we handed it to the man. And at the last second, I took the check back and we decided to think about it. And as we were driving home from Florida, we found another one online, but which turned out to be this boat. But Mark had to go back to work. So I came down later that week and looked at her by myself and called him and said, I'm going to buy this boat.
Okay. There's lots of feedback now from me laughing too loudly. But okay. So basically you just, I mean, I'm just still thinking about the guy who had the check in his hand and then you took it off him. I mean,
yeah,
he hates you, right?
That's okay. He was a broker. He'll be fine.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Nobody cares about that. So how did Mark react when you rang him up and said, I'm about to spend all of this money on a boat?
He said, okay.
No way.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, we had looked at almost the same model. And so he knew basically what he was getting. And we did go to Florida a few weeks later, and we had a survey. We had the boat hauled. We took the boat out sailing, even though we didn't really know anything about that part of it. So we did get to look at it and inspect it before we signed the paperwork. But he's...
Yeah, I trust her judgment, but I also knew I had an out with the survey. So if it was a bad decision, then we would have only lost the survey money and the haul-out money. So
yeah, you're giving away too much there. So you mentioned that have you made some changes?
We've actually made quite a few changes. Even though she technically was turnkey, we've upgraded things because we will not have the income that we've had as soon as we leave. So we've gone ahead and upgraded our solar panels. We've upgraded the chart plotter. We've replaced all of the foam, whether it be the salon cushions or the beds or the cockpit cushions. I've redone all of the canvas on the boat. I've learned to sew during this process. so we've done nothing major. We've hauled her and done a bottom job. Mark's flailing at me. What am I forgetting?
You're leaving out the sail arch, the hard top.
Oh, the hard
completely
top.
Enclosing the cockpit. That's the radar. just a few, you
just
know.
Just a few minor. Tiny.
Whoa! Have you put a wheelhouse on this boat?
Not a wheelhouse per se. The Bimini that we had before had the solar panels hard mounted to it, so you could never drop the Bimini. And the Bimini and the Dodger combination was kind of worn out and all needed to be redone. And we also knew we wanted a radar upgrade. And I wasn't really crazy about the mast-mounted radars that were out there. I don't know why, it just didn't seem like a smart thing to put a radar up there where I can rip it off with a sail, especially that since we're not great sailors. So we, I guess I'll go ahead and give them a plug because they were a good company to work with. Atlantic Towers in New Jersey, they have a sail arch in a box. And then between them and me, we custom designed a hard top that you could install to the sail arch. And basically we replaced the Bimini and the Dodger all in one fiberglass top.
That sounds really good. That sounds like something you could market.
And the price of the whole system came in about half of what I had. I had several local and even out of state companies quoted, and they all came in around 22,000 US, and we were able to do the custom top and the arch and everything for about 8,000. And I did the install, but as far as the structure being manufactured, that was all done by Atlantic. And you can see some details on that on our website.
Yeah. Well, I'll have a look. So, Jennifer, what's the plan? You are currently in Savannah, Georgia. Actually, I'll ask you a question about that, because you're from Oklahoma. So how have you ended up in Savannah?
Well, we took a Mark took a transfer from his aerospace company in Oklahoma to Savannah, and was with them off and on while we were here for the past, we've been here almost 18 years, I believe. From here, we will leave, and really we're going to stay north of 31 degrees per our insurance for October. So we're going to hang out at anchor and visit all of the nearby islands, the coastal Georgia islands. And as soon as hurricane season is over November 1st, we head south to possibly direct to Miami. We may make a stop. We're not sure yet. Straight to Miami and visit with some friends and have some vet work done for our dogs, so that we can then hop across to the Bahamas with our dogs and start our adventures.
This 31 degrees thing, this is something else that people outside America maybe won't appreciate so much, but your insurance won't allow you to go south of 31 degrees until November 1st.
We could. We would just have to adjust our policy and pay an additional fee. So we're just going to wait a couple of weeks before we head south.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we are trying to stick to our budget. So rather than spend the few hundred dollars it would cost to do an addendum to the insurance policy, we're just going to use it as a month-long shakedown cruise and make sure we have everything in great working order before we cross over to the Bahamas.
And you could spend months on the barrier islands in coastal Georgia and never see them all. So there's plenty to, it's not like we'll just be sitting around waiting. There's plenty to explore between here and Florida.
You see, I didn't know that. So that's very interesting. That's something I must look into for a future program. So the Bahamas, and you're going to spend some time, I presume, in and around the islands of the Bahamas. And then what? Around the Caribbean, all those different beauty spots that you've heard about and seen and read about and maybe visited on your scuba holidays?
Exactly. We have no set plan. We have some key places we know we want to see. But with our open-ended schedule, we can go anywhere we want, really. The slower that we travel, honestly, the smaller our budget can be, because we can stay at anchor for a week or two to save some money and then go and really enjoy an island and do the sightseeing and eating at restaurants, cram all that in without blowing our budget. From the Bahamas, we plan Puerto Rico, the Spanish Virgin Islands, the U.S. Virgin Islands, the British Virgin Islands. Dominica is pretty close to the top of my list. And then Mark definitely has some preferred dive islands he would like to hit as well.
Yeah, all of them.
All of them.
I've done a lot of diving in the Caribbean, and it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I spent quite a long time in the island of St. Martin once, diving wrecks around St. Martin. Gosh, it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm really envious of your trip. So on your website, you've got a bucket list. You know, you've got a list of must-see places. So let's have go through those very quickly. Not the whole list, because it's enormous, just the highlights. So, Jennifer, what's your number one must-see destination?
Oh, I can only have one.
Okay, as many as you like. You got all the time.
For some reason, Dominica is at the top of my list. One of our options as we do this is to find somewhere that we would like to settle down and live. That may never happen. We're very happy on our boat. but we do look at each island we visit with that in the back of our mind. Is that somewhere we could live? And Dominica, from what I understand, produces food, and I am quite fond of food.
Okay, well, I don't know anything about it, actually. I've never been there, and do you know, I don't think I know anybody who's been there. So I'll be interested to find out what you think of it when you finally get there. Mark, how about you? What are your, you know, two or three places you absolutely have to visit?
Belize, Honduras, and the Bay Islands. That's mostly because our initial dive instructor back in this is going back about 1,000 years ago when we got certified in Oklahoma, that just told these fantastic stories about, you know, doing night dives and being able to see your fins in the moonlight. And we got, actually got open water certified in lakes in Oklahoma where you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. So I think just the stories he told, you know, kind of makes me want to do Honduras for sure. And then Belize, just the Blue Hole and a lot of the places I've read about around there.
Yeah, the Barrier Reef off the coast of Belize is absolutely spectacular, isn't it? What about outside of the Caribbean, around the world? I mean, the whole world is your oyster. You can go wherever you like, drifting along on your sailboat. Where will you go?
I would love to spend time in the Mediterranean.
Oh, yeah. Will Mallorca be on your list?
Yes.
We need a lot of miles logged behind us, though, before we make that jump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because keep in mind, we're still pretty green, so we'll need a lot of experience before we jump off into an endeavor like that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, you'll gain that experience around the Caribbean, and then... this is a question I should have asked you earlier, but which way round are you going to go? Are you going to do Caribbean, Panama Canal, Pacific, Polynesia, Micronesia, and up round towards the Mediterranean that way, through the Suez Canal or round the Cape of Good Hope, or will you cross the Atlantic?
That is entirely too far into the future.
No, that's fantastic. I love that you don't have a plan.
Yeah, we're trying to be as open-ended as we can.
I notice you mention on your website the Camino de Santiago. Is that for spiritual reasons, or are you simply tempted by the amazing scenery?
Probably the scenery.
No, that's fair enough. That's fine. I suppose we should explain that the Camino, it's the Way of St. James, and it's an ancient route, you know, dating way back to the Middle Ages, that Christian pilgrims used to take, starting in the Pyrenees, and it ends at Cap Finisterre, literally the end of the world, what the Romans thought was the end of the world. They thought it was the westernmost point of Europe, although they were wrong. Will friends or will your daughter visit you along the way?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, of course, the worst thing on a sailboat to have is a schedule, so timing, vacations, and everything we've read about that, predicting where you're going to be, when you're going to be somewhere, is going to be a challenge. We will have a cabin available if schedules can line up and folks want to join us, for sure.
You know, speaking of friends, we mustn't forget to mention, and you did mention them very briefly earlier on, you're going to be traveling with a pair of furry friends because you have two dogs, which to me just means complications. But Mark, tell us all about, I think it's Molly and Libby, is that right? And my daughter's name is Molly, actually. Does this not prevent you from landing places with quarantine rules and regulations?
Yeah, we'll have some of that. And that's probably the area that we're the least educated in. And Jen's been doing a lot of research the last couple of weeks, figuring out the ins and outs of how to get the dogs in and out of certain countries. And they're both older, so not to be crass, but which islands we'll have to save until after they depart. So we're trying to figure out, you know, the path of least resistance as far as getting them in and out of countries.
I mean, do you have to give notice? Like, you have to get something? What I mean is, you apply for permission to land with your dogs, you get some sort of certificate or piece of paper that allows you to do that, and then, you know, will you not be tied to like a 30-day window and things like that?
Yes, yes. We are actually leaving some of the last minute work until we get to Miami in November, because the Bahamas has a 48-hour window. So we need to have our form minutes before we set sail to cross over to Bimini. It it's confusing and there's a lot to it, and each country has its own regulations, and it is up to us to find and learn and understand and follow those rules and regulations as we visit each of these countries.
Sounds like you might get a guidebook out of it, actually. So listen, I've kept you guys long enough and it's been fantastic to talk to you. I've really enjoyed it. Mark, is there a possibility that you might never go back, that you might never find that garden for Jennifer and that you just might keep on sailing?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll figure that out as we skip from island to island, but as long as we're loving it, it is an open-ended cruise.
Well, I think that's a fantastic place to stop. We'll draw this interview to a close. Mark, Jennifer, thank you both for telling us all about your life aquatic.
Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you. It was our pleasure.